All right.
So the next section in chapter 6 is about line integrals, and I think it's best to break it up into two chunks, two class days. So today we won't really be talking about vector fields. That'll happen tomorrow. Because before we can do the line integrals that involve vector fields, we need to understand the basics of what is a line integral, period. And so we need to remember some stuff. Think back to chapter 3. I suppose multivariate functions started in chapter 4. But we need to think about parametric curves, because they're called line integrals, but line here, if people were using more modern terminology, they probably would have used curve, but line integral has stuck. But people used to talk about lines without meaning a straight line. Think of it as an integral along a curve. Curvy line. So we have some example here. Okay. Here I'll give a little motivation. Okay. Let's say I have a helix. And it can be 3D if we want. And so, we can parameterize the helix. If you like, you can think of it as we're an ant or something crawling along the helix to trace out all of the helix. So you can make a position vector as a function of time. So remember, to be clear here, this is position vector, right? An arrow from the origin. So wherever the origin is. At time t, we have an arrow points to where we are. Okay. And we keep the time domain limited usually. Unless we really need a curve that goes out to infinity or something. Usually it's supposed to have a start and an end. Makes things simpler. Okay, so for example, maybe this is where t is the starting value, and then we dance along the helix. So we get the end t equals v. So, for example, we could have a helix around keep it simple. This would be a helix that's got radius 3, goes around the z-axis, and so this helix will do this. I can keep the radii the same. 1, 2, 3. Thank you. radius of 3, z-axis is the center. It's even a circular helix, right? And it makes 4 revolutions. 8 pi is 4 times 2 pi. Drawing of it. And that. One little bug, though, that's supposed to be a T. Okay? And if you wanted, you could compute some things. Like, what if you wanted, say, the center of mass of this thing? Okay? Let's call the helix H. Assuming uniform density. Where's the center of mass, right? Well, we do the usual thing. Except now, instead of doing an integral over a two-dimensional region where you have x dA to get divided by integral of dA to get average x-coordinate, or dV if it's 3D. Now it's just 1D. So instead of a little bit of area, you're going to cut it up into a little bit of arc length. So what does this? What does these things mean? So you imagine a little segment on here. Where you take the value for x at some sample time ti, and then you multiply it by the this thing. So that would be the length between two of them. So you'd have a little bit of arc length. So the idea is you should just think of it as it's a bunch of little arc lengths times whatever the function is. So in this case, we would probably do something like we use the Pythagorean theorem, right? So you can do this. You'd have to imagine a little little piece here, right? You measure the arc length by just measuring the distance between two points, so that estimates an underestimate of the true arc length of that little piece. And then you have to multiply by the x value right here. So you imagine cutting up, say, a helical wire into a bunch of little wire segments. And each wire segment is at a certain x-coordinate, roughly, right? If it's a short wire segment, it's roughly all at the same x-coordinate. So you're multiplying an x-coordinate by a little length. Then you have to add them all up. Okay. Now, the key here is that we turn an actual, short line segment into its approximation, which gets better and better in the limit of shorter and shorter line segments. And then what is this? Well, here we just need to, these differentials would just be derivatives, right? Times some dt's. How much is x changing as we go from one time to the next? Roughly the derivative, the rate of change of x, times the change in time. And you can factor out the dt's. So it's just going to be x prime squared plus y prime squared plus z prime squared. Okay, so the integral of x times ds is just going to be an integral where t goes from 0 to 8 pi. And we did arc length before, way back early in the semester. One of the last things we did in chapter 3. And the only difference now is simply the ds, this which we had seen before. Now we have just multiply by the formula for x. Right? So this is x, 3 cosine t. X position, y position, z position. 3 cosine t, 3 sine t, and t. And then we have this square root here. So we have to take a derivative of x with respect to time. So that's a negative 3 sine t. Then the derivative of y with respect to time is 3 cosine t. And then the derivative of z with respect to time is 1. And this simplifies massively because sine squared plus cosine squared is 1. So this is just going to be 3 squared plus 1 squared. Okay. So in this case, we get something really easy. It's just going to be an integral from 0 to 8 pi of some constants we can factor out. The 3 and the square root of 10 from here, and 3 from there. Now the cosine oscillates between plus and minus 1. Right? And when it goes over, when it goes a full cycle, it's symmetric in the sense that it has as much positive area over the x-axis as area below the x-axis, or I guess there's a t-axis. So in any case, this integral is going to be 0 by symmetry. But if you don't believe that just yet, actually take the antiderivative, plug in 8 pi and 0. Right? The sine of any multiple of pi is 0. Right, so it's 0 minus 0. And that's what you'd expect, because this thing is centered about the z-axis. So the center of mass should be at x equals 0. That's no surprise. And similarly, the y center of mass is 0. Instead of a 3 cosine t here, you would have a 3 sine t, but you'd end up with the same situation because of the symmetry of integrating over a cosine or a sine wave that's got a mean of 0, and you're going over a whole number of cycles. What about this? See, this one might actually be interesting. Okay, so z is just t. S. So a little bit of arc length of the helix, remember, is going to be approximately the square root of 10 times a little bit of time we took to traverse that little bit of the helix. And so we take that little piece, we multiply it by its z-coordinate, which happens to match the time in our parameterization, and we integrate over all the time to go over the whole helix. All right. So, let's see. Will there be anything earth-shattering happening here? Let's see. We can factor out the square root of 10. And, okay, the antiderivative of t squared over 2 at 0 and 8 pi. So, what? Well, you plug in 0, you get nothing. You plug in 8 pi, you get something, so. Okay, that's not the center of mass. That's just the integral of z times length. We actually need the arc length to get the z center of mass, right? So that one easier. So just an arc length integral, just like in chapter 3. So the arc length differential worked out to be really easy. Right? It's just the square root of 10 times dt. Okay, so you're just integrating square root of 10 times changes in time, and the total change in time from 0 to 8 pi is 8 pi. So put this together, and the z center of mass coordinate will be the integral of z ds divided by the length of the helix. So this will give us the average z-coordinate. What will it be? Well, let's see. We got... here's our numerator. Here's our denominator. We cancel some stuff, and the result is not surprising at all. It's just the middle z coordinate, right? At the top end of the helix, it's 8 pi, right? Z equals t equals 8 pi. At the bottom end of the helix, z equals t equals 0. What did we get? 4 pi, right in the middle, okay?
No surprise here.
So it works.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing about this this setup here is that it didn't matter which way we went on the helix, right? It didn't. The fact that I parameterized it to start at the bottom and go around until we got up to this higher point at the top, that was irrelevant. Geometrically, you know, we know that has to be true. This was about the helix and where its center of mass is. And that has nothing to do with whether or not you thought of an ant crawling up the helix or down the helix. None of that matters. Right? It's purely geometric. And one way we see that is the this ds parameter. Right? It only depends on the squares of the derivatives. Right? So if we reverse things, if we'd gone the opposite way on the helix in our parameterization, the time derivatives would have changed their signs, but it didn't matter because they got squared. So with an arc length differential, the orientation of the curve, which way you parameterize it, it doesn't matter. But that is going to matter when we look at these differentials, dx, dy, dz differential. Those are a little different. I'm going to keep that board there so we can refer to this helix some more and do some other kinds of line integrals now with the dx, dy, and dz differentials. So any questions about this one? So we found the center of mass right in the geometric center where you'd expect. Now, let's look at something different. Same helix. For example, we could look at this. What would that be? Right. I'm not going to try and give that one a geometric or physical interpretation. It's more arbitrary and made up. But it it doesn't have a good motivation from physics or geometry, but it does have a precise definition. Okay, so what is it? So if you wanted to approximate it numerically on a spreadsheet or with a calculator, you would have a sum of terms of the form what? Well, you'd have the y-coordinate at time ti times the z-coordinate time ti. So you're just plugging in the values of the y and z-coordinates at some time where you're sampling, a sample point on your helix here. Imagine some little piece of the helix here. How do I usually have the x-axis? Usually have the complex. Okay, so the orientation matters. Let me draw it this way, but it's slightly easier to see. Okay, so let's say t equals ti. It's here, and then the next sample time is right over here. Okay? Something like that. And we make a measurement of the x-coordinate. Right? We also make measurements of the y and z-coordinates. But we're taking y times z, and we're going to multiply it by the change in x. Okay. So maybe call this one x sub I plus 1, and call this one x sub I, right? And just subtract them. So now, instead of taking the value of a function and multiplying it by the length of a little piece, now we multiply by the progress of the x-coordinate, if you will. Right? How much does the x-coordinate change in this little piece? Now, that change could be positive or negative. And with an arc length, each little piece always has a positive little length. We're approximating by a straight line segment. Here, depending on where we are on the helix, in some places, like it starts off here, x is going to be decreasing. But then as soon as we get to here, then it's increasing. Then we go a half turn up. Now x is decreasing for a half turn, then increasing for a half turn, decreasing, increasing, increasing, increasing. So depending on where we are, delta x can be positive or negative. Or it could be zero. If we just happen to measure two sample points with exactly the same x-coordinate, it could happen. even if they're not the same y and z coordinates, the x coordinate could be the same. So it looks like that. Okay. And we estimate this thing for a small piece by the differential dx, which would be the time derivative, times a little interval of time, right? And that we know exactly, right? That's just a change in time. We're choosing the times at which we sample this helix, so that's no problem. It's just the estimate of the change of x, we just multiply by the derivative. And so in the limit, that's a better and better estimate. Okay, so put all this together. And so this integral will be from t equals 0 to t equals 8 pi. And so we'll have y. What's y? 3 times the sine of t. What's z? Z is t. Right? So at some time, we look at y times z times a change in x, which will be the derivative, negative 3 sine of t in this case, times dt. You can think of it as this is your x velocity times the little change in time. So that's your little bit of change in x coordinate. And once we have it that way, then we can do the integral. Any questions about this? So if you learn how to interpret these differentials, then these are pretty easy, right? It just becomes a single variable integral. It's not double integral or anything like that. What do we got? Negative 9 t sine squared t dt. Okay. This integral is actually going to come out negative. If you want to do it by hand, I guess you can integrate by parts, right? What would that be? Let's see. Well, yeah, it's kind of a pain because I'm going to need to... If I integrate by parts, I'll take the derivative of t. I'll need the antiderivative of sine squared of t. So I'm going to have to use the half-angle formula or something. And then I'm going to have to take the antiderivative of that. It's going to be a little tedious. But I'll spare you all that. I'll have my calculator do this one. And the answer is negative 144 pi squared. You might wonder why it works out that way. One thing about this is that the z here is always positive. So if you want to know, if you want to understand why it's negative, think about that. Z is always positive, and then look at the y dx factor and kind of take an overhead view of the thing. Okay. So from overhead, the helix looks like this. Looks like a circle centered about the origin and counterclockwise. Okay. Now, in this quadrant, we have y is positive, but look at how we're moving. We're moving to the left. So our x-coordinate is decreasing, so the change in x as we go along a little piece will be negative. Right? And then look at this quadrant. Y-coordinate is still positive, and dx is still negative. We're still moving to the left, right? Now look at this quadrant. Now y-coordinate has gone negative, But at the exact same time that that switch happens, we start going to the right. So now the dx is positive. Because x is increasing. And the same thing at this quadrant over here. So in all these cases, you see that the sine of y is always opposite the sine of dx. So y times dx, no matter where we are here, except at the where we cross the coordinate axes, where it happens to be exactly zero, but everywhere else, right? Except for four special points, y times dx is always negative. And it's the zero at the four special points. It's only zero at... It's just zero at these two points, in fact. Whole top half, it's negative. Bottom half, it's negative. It's momentarily zero here and here. So you're always having this y times dx be negative, and the z is positive, so... The integral then will be a negative times a positive. So you're always integrating negative numbers. You're adding up a bunch of negative numbers. And in this case, they add up to the big negative number, negative 144 pi squared. And you see that the orientation of a helix mattered. If we had switched things, if we had had the helix go the other way, then we would have gotten the opposite answer. I took a picture of that so I can push this down. So we define the concept of negative h as being the helix h with opposite orientation. How do you make that happen, right? Think of it as time reversed, right? So we start at the top of our helix and work down. How could we do that algebraically? You kind of naturally would want to replace t with negative t, right? The caveat is that you want to start at t equals 8 pi. So what we do is have it be 8 pi minus t. Okay? That'll work. So then starting at t equals 0, this will keep then as that'll put it at 8 pi in terms of the old formula. And then as t goes up to 8 pi, 8 pi minus t will go down to 0. That's how you can flip it. So you can do that if you need the parameterization, but you don't need to go to all that trouble if all you want is a line integral along the reverse helix. Just use this. Just do the the regular forward helix and then multiply by negative 1. This actually works because if you want to prove... If you want to prove this works, what you do is you make a u substitution in your integral of the 8 pi minus t. And then your du will be negative dt. By taking the derivative and multiplying by dt. The derivative is just negative 1 here. So that means the dt in the integral becomes a negative du. And that negative sign is what you then factor out to here. And the limits... also flip, right? You get u equals... u equals 8 pi t equals 0. And you also get that things like say dx dt will be the opposite of dx du, dy dt will be the opposite of dy du, same for z. I don't really want to go into the proof, but you just have to just carry through all the minus signs. So, for example, here, if we had done the integral along the reverse helix, whether we made a u substitution and figured it out, or we just use our shortcut, we would get positive 144 pi squared. And that's what we should expect, because we'd be going the opposite way around the circle. From overhead, it would look like now a clockwise circle. Right? And on the top half of this, circle, we would have y positive and dx positive, because now on the top half we'd be moving to the right. And on the bottom half we'd have y negative and dx also negative, because we're moving to the left on the bottom half. And so we would get y times dx positive. So that's what we'd expect. It just flips things. So usually you don't need to mess around with, you know, figuring out the reverse time parameterization. With these line integrals, you can just do that.
Questions about this?
There's another thing we could do which is you could put multiple curves together end to end. In fact, they don't even have to be connected. The natural thing you think of is when they're connected end to end, but it doesn't even have to be that way. So we could imagine here's curve C1, and here's curve C2, right? And then the whole thing together is curve C1 plus C2. Right? That's what we mean by C1 plus C2. You could also have a situation where they're not connected. And we would talk about C3 plus C4, but what does that really mean? So, in this case where it's connected, it's clear that if we do any kind of line integral, we could get it by first integrating from the time when we're here to the time when we're here, right, to this middle time, and that would be one integral, and then we could add the integral from the middle time to this end time here, and it would work out fine. And for this one, well, we're just going to define it to work that way. Say if we have two curves, even if they're disconnected, we'll say that the sum curve, whatever that means, as far as line integrals go, just integrate on each part and add them together. Okay. Even if they're not connected. Okay, so now, for example, we could have a loop in two parts if we wanted. Let's say I had this. That's going to be a hemisphere. I'm going to do an integral around this loop. So right there at the origin will be 0, 0. And let's say this is 5, 0, negative 5, 0. So it's going to be a hemisphere, upper hemisphere, centered about the origin. And it's going to have radius 5. So this top part here satisfies x squared plus y squared equals 5 squared. And this will just be a two-dimensional line integral. So let's call this, what should I call it? Let's call this part L and call this part M. So let's say I want to integrate the loop L plus M. And I want to figure out x, dy on this thing. How would I do that? I'd need to parameterize. There's two different pieces, so I'll probably have different parameterizations for each piece. Okay. So I need some kind of parameterization for the first piece. Look at this piece. It's a straight line. Y is going to be 0, right? And then x, well, x can just be t, right? It's just a range of x values from negative 5 to 5. So just let x be t itself. Right? And you can let t go from negative 5 to 5. And if we do that, then some things will get very easy. Notice that, look at dy. Well, y is 0. That's a constant. So its derivative is also 0. Derivative of 0 is 0. So the dy term is 0. Okay, so in L, the x dy integral contributes nothing. It's all because the dy will be 0 every time, because the y coordinate never changes on here. So the real integral is here. That's the interesting part. How might you parameterize this semicircle on the top half? What would you do? Use the polar coordinates, right? You don't. If you prefer, you can use a theta instead of the t, right? How would it go? Right? In polar coordinates, r is 5, yeah? What is the range of theta? 0 to pi, right? Okay, so r is 5, and remember, x is r cosine theta, y is r sine theta. And now let's figure out some things here. So we need a dy, don't we? Right? Because we're going to have x times dy. So dy is going to be the derivative of this thing times, in this case, since I used a theta instead of a dt, I'll get a d theta. So the derivative is 5 cosine theta multiplied by d theta. Right? So a little change in theta will change y by approximately that change in theta times 5 times the cosine of the present value of theta. Okay. So then up here, we now have an integral from theta equals 0 to theta equals pi of x, so 5 cosine theta times dy. Okay, so another 5 cosine theta, but now also a d theta. All right. Let's see, that's it's a cosine squared. So I believe that this will come out to be, remember the cosine squared integral, it looks like a wave with its mean at a half. And I think it has, and it doubles the frequency. So this will actually, instead of be a half cycle, it's a whole cycle. So it's going to be a half on it, times pi, the length there. So I believe you'll get 25 halves pi. You could confirm that with your calculator, or you could look up the half angle formula and turn cosine squared into 1/2 plus 1/2 of cosine 2 theta and do a U substitution, work it out. So let me give you a little bit of homework to this. Homework 46, not due for a while. Right? It's the day 41 through 45 is due Monday. Okay, so let T be the oriented triangle. So this is going to be a triangular loop. We're going to go from 0, 0 to 4, 0. And I'm going to go to, let's say, 0, 3. And we will proceed in a counterclockwise loop. First, find the center of mass, T. You can assume uniform density.
And then find, let's see, x squared dy. Okay.